So today we are going to talk about finances in older age, and this is a topic that I wanted to bring up because it does touch on a lot of issues for families. Older adults have a desire to maintain independence and age in place, and their ability to deal with finances directly impacts that. It's directly related to financial security over the life course, and it has big implications for the role of family relationships and communication, especially between adult children and aging parents, or between any family members or friends who are assisting someone who is aging. And so specifically, I'm going to tell you today about some recent research looking at financial capabilities and financial confidence in older adults. And so if you have the handout in front of you, I'll be talking through the three figures on that handout. If you don't, that's okay. You'll be able to understand what we're seeing without actually looking at the figures. But the figures will help sort of visualize what it is that this research found. So for this study, the authors used data from a large survey of adults across the United States. Hi. The survey included a financial literacy questionnaire, which has 20 questions that test people's functional understanding of financial terms and concepts. And so there's one example of that question. They're all multiple choice, but one example, just to contextualize a little bit what these questions sound like, is if your assets increase by $5,000, and your liabilities decrease by $3,000, your net worth would, and then there's three response choices, and people have to think about which of those response choices is correct. So it's not an easy thing to do, but it's also not impossible. There are people who have perfect scores and people who don't score well at all. On average in this survey, the highest average over age was around 64% correct on that scale, and so people were getting, you know, somewhere around half, maybe a third, maybe up to two-thirds correct on average. Of course, there's a big variation there. Some people scored very low, and some people scored very high on the whole thing. But I bring up that example just to point out that this financial literacy questionnaire is challenging. In addition to that, the questionnaire asked people to rank their confidence about managing their money, managing credit and debt, using investment products, and using insurance products, and they scored that on a 0 to 10 scale. So some people, of course, felt 100% confident in their ability to do those things, and some people felt very not confident in their ability to do those things. And what the authors did was they were interested in seeing how financial literacy and then also financial confidence changed over the life course. And so they looked at people at all the age categories. And what they ended up finding was kind of surprising and a little bit concerning. So if you're looking at the handout, we're going to start by looking at figure one. What this handout shows is people at different ages along the bottom, ranging from 24 to 94, and then the financial literacy score on the left-hand side. And what we're seeing here is that financial literacy increases with age up until around age 49, and then it decreases, and it decreases pretty precipitously when you get to the 74, 84, 94 age group. So we're going from people scoring like a 62, 63, 64 on average at age 49, all the way down to an average score of like 15 at 94 years of age. And this is different people at different ages. It's not the same people over time. So that's important to consider, but they did take into account household characteristics, so like level of education. You could expect that someone who is currently 94 might have had different educational opportunities than someone who's currently 54 or someone who's currently 24, but they take that into account, as well as other household characteristics, things like income, net worth, size of family, that kind of thing. And so what we're seeing here is that older people on average had lower levels of financial literacy than younger people. And we might be able to think that that means that financial literacy actually declines over time as people age. We don't know that for sure, but that's the inference here. That's what we think might be happening. So then what the authors did is they were interested in seeing how that relates to people's financial confidence. So if you jump down to figure two, that's what we're looking at there. On the bottom, again, there's age, and this is just in the subset of the population that they're mostly interested in, that 60 to 90 age group. And then on the left, those are the scores for all of the things on this chart, so financial literacy, confidence, and then a couple other things that we're not going to talk about much. And if you look at the purple squares, that is financial literacy at each age time. And you can see, just like we saw in the graph above, that we're seeing a decline in financial literacy over the age groups. Then look at the red line on the top, and that's confidence in financial ability. And what we're seeing is that that doesn't change at all. People think that people, regardless of their age and regardless of their financial literacy, think that they are very able in their financial skills. They have high confidence in their financial abilities. And if you look at the blue line on the very bottom, that's tracking overconfidence, the proportion of people who are essentially overconfident in their financial ability. That stays pretty stable on the earlier ages, but as we get towards like 85 and 90, that spikes up quite a lot, where there seems to be a larger proportion of people who are overconfident in their financial abilities once they get to those older ages. So let's just look at this last figure here, figure 3. You'll need to flip over the handout for that or scroll down to the next page. And what we're seeing here is just a reaffirmation that these changes in financial literacy, the decline that we're seeing in different age groups, that's consistent across topic areas. So it doesn't matter if it's basic financial information, borrowing information, investing information, or insurance information. For all of those, people's financial literacy declined over time. So on the handout, I do list some key points and some tools and resources. The real take-home point that I take from this is that if this translates into people's actual skills over time, because, again, this is different people at different time points, and so we're comparing people who are 94 to people who are 64. But if that translates to an actual decline in financial literacy in one person from when they're 64 to 94, that's really concerning, especially because people's confidence doesn't change. If their confidence went down along with their financial literacy, we wouldn't be as worried because then they'd know to ask for help. They would feel less certain and they'd be more likely to reach out. But they think they're doing just fine. And the objective data say that they are not as financially literate and may not be making as good of decisions as they think they're making. So that really has some important implications for families overall. I think a big one is focusing on pre-planning, because if people know about this, if they know that this is a thing, that can help them go, you know, am I making really good financial decisions, or should I be enlisting more help or taking more time to make these decisions? And if they've pre-planned in terms of estate planning, or if they've had those conversations with their families ahead of time, that can be a lot more useful in terms of combating the potential poor decisions or potential risk of being defrauded or being caught in a scam that might happen for these older adults. There's also the opportunity to maybe improve financial literacy training for older adults. Just because financial literacy decreases, it doesn't mean that that can't be pushed up or bolstered through education. And, you know, there is a risk for these older adults, if they do have declining financial literacy, that they are more likely to get caught up in scams, like I mentioned before. So maybe there's an important factor of doing public service announcements and helping people think about these things more critically, and also supporting families who are dealing with this, because it's possible that the families of older adults are going to need to address issues of independence and financial independence before older adults think that they need that. And that is a huge potential source of conflict for families. So with that, I'm really curious to hear what you all think about this research, what you think it means. And then I do have some points for discussion on the very bottom to talk about how we as Extension can use this information and what that means for Extension practice and Extension education. What do you guys think?
Hi, this is Kristen East. And Kristen, I look at this information and I think about the time and I think about, okay, so I'm old to start off with, that people who are 80, 90 years old grew up in a time when credit cards were not as widely used, much less financial apps. So is it really a decline in literacy or just a reflection of how things have changed? You know what I mean?
Yeah, Chris, that's a great question or a great comment. So that is what researchers call cohort effects, and it's the idea that people who are 90 are just different than people who are 60 at any given time point, because they had different opportunities, because the world was different and changed a lot over that 30-year span. So the authors of this study did try to account for that. They did a lot of subgroup analyses, so they split out people with high education, for example, and tested what this looked like just in that subgroup. And they found that it looks the same in all of the different subgroups that they tested. We can't rule that out, but they did try to account for it as well as they could. And that's why I wanted to emphasize that this isn't the same people over time, and it could end up looking different. But the core point of the fact that there's this issue of overconfidence where those people who are 85 and 90 have really high confidence but on average lower financial literacy, that's still concerning, right? And so even if it isn't a change over time, which is possible that it isn't, it's also possible that it is, I think we still need to be worried about the decisions that people in those older age groups are making and basically facilitate their ability to make good decisions or facilitate their ability to get help making good decisions so that they aren't ending up losing out on money that they should have or getting scammed or struggling and having stress around financial decisions with credit, for example, as you brought up, that they might not be fully understanding. So that's a great point, and I totally agree with that.
And I agree with what you're saying too, and I'm often in disbelief when I hear about older women in particular who, when their spouse dies, you know, they're 80 some years old and they've never managed the finances in their household because that was my husband's job.
Yeah.
It still happens too.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other area, and actually I just got a notice this week from Legal Action that they're starting to provide services that really targets elder financial abuse because of what they're finding. And it's everybody from your grandkids to the aides at the assisted living facility that are doing horrible things.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is huge, huge, huge. This is great research again.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and it's great that there are other partners in the community who are trying to find ways to combat this because it is, I mean, these people are at risk for financial abuse, and how we fix that problem is a huge question.
And we continue to see in our papers, and I would guess other folks have, about the scams that the email message you get that from your grandchild,
yeah,
that care, or the, and anyway, it continues today.
Yes, and this time of year, the IRS scams are really big. So people get a phone call, and it's from the quote-unquote IRS, and they basically get strong-armed and scared into sending a lot of money to something that is not the IRS. So that's a big one this time of year, and one that kind of comes up iteratively. I note in the tools and resources that you can get scam alerts by email, and that could be useful for families and people in general, but it might also be useful if this is something that you're in the habit of mentioning during, like, Strong Bones or something, you know, if you just have a little PSA. I don't know if anyone does that or if that would be well-received or not, but this information gets reported in the newspaper and it comes up on the news, but I feel like the more times people hear about these scams, the better able they are to be skeptical if they are on the receiving end of one of those phone calls or emails. And in fact, I note this in the handout, but there's evidence that when you warn older people about scams, it helps them to reject the scam later, and that has an effect over time. That's not something that is just specific to one scam. It kind of spreads out to people going, now there was a scam about the IRS. Maybe this email from the Nigerian prince is not legitimate. I should look into this more. So telling people about scams does help to prevent that kind of financial abuse.
And Kristen, this is Jane in Sheboygan, and I think to share these resources with family caregivers.
Yes.
You know, in terms of, because I think about, I still have a landline phone in my house, and I think about how many, even though I keep, you know, registering my phone numbers with the do not call list and all that, but they find ways to get around that. And when I think about how many times I've gotten the IRS call,
yeah,
or how many times I've gotten, my husband and I had a name for her. I think she was Charlene. I don't know. Anyway, Carmen, she called constantly about even a credit card thing,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah,
and consolidating and this kind of thing. And when I think about my neighbor and how trusting she was,
yeah,
of people, and even so far as letting them into her home, you know. So, I think this is concerning information, but great information, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, and that opens the question of how do family caregivers or families in general know when it's time to step in and have that conversation with mom or dad about their finances specifically. And, I mean, that mirrors having the conversation about driving. It mirrors a lot of other conversations that at some point a lot of families need to have with the older adults in their lives. And I don't have a good answer to that. I mean, I guess my answer to that is, well, these families should be having these conversations before it becomes a problem and have ongoing conversations. But there's bound to be a lot of resistance and upsetness about losing independence, even when it might be important for older adults to be getting more support. And I don't have good suggestions about how to do that. Chris, maybe you can comment on this. There used to be a curriculum that was used in Wisconsin for adult children and aging parents. It was basically a relationship and conversation curriculum, right?
That's right. And so it was a series of, I believe, 6 or 7 lessons to do a multi-part series. And the first lesson was about just having those conversations about the things that have changed, the relationships. And then the subsequent lessons dealt with specific topics. One was on talking about housing, talking about medical care, talking about wishes. And it came out of Iowa. And history, guys. Working with Mary Britnell Peterson and Karen Goble, Judy Knudsen and I Wisconsinized it in terms of some of the legal and financial pieces that were there. But it's been quite a while since we looked at that curriculum.
And I don't know if there's any other, there's a lot of relationship curricula that are in the field for parenting, for example, but I don't know if there's anything that are targeting sort of the later life and middle life families. Does anyone know of anything, or is anyone engaged in any sort of relationship or communication curriculum for older families? Okay. Is that a need? Do you guys see that as a need in your communities?
This is Lillianne from Milwaukee. I see other programs doing a great job of that. I think the only thing I can do is lift up and refer people.
Okay. Yeah, it's great if there are other programs doing it. This is one of those cases where I don't quite know what Extension's best role is here.
Yeah.
I recently have been talking about this was a seed that was planted by Ann Kime and Paula Tranzio, but thinking about Extension as an incubator. So we take things that need to be researched or are based on research. We incubate them, and then we send them off into the community, and maybe it gets picked up by the ADRC or by other groups. And so thinking about what needs to be incubated, what can we serve a good role as the place that figures something out the right way and turns it into something that is going to be high demand and high impact. So I've been trying to think about that in this context, too, and what families need and what our role can be in providing that and then making it sustainable by sending it out into the community.
Well, this is Chris again, and the updated version of adult children, aging parents, conversations across generations, is now two modules.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one focuses on, again, it's focusing on the changes that you see and start in using case situations, having discussions about what do you see playing out in these families. And the second module focuses on different communication styles, and again, it has case or situation statements to work through with your group. I've used it a little bit. I think it's a good start if you're looking at something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available online.
Yeah, and we've got a link to that in the handout. So thank you, Chris, for your guidance on that. So the other curriculum that I found that might be of interest to you as educators is something called Money Smart for Older Adults. Well, that's different from Money Smart for Head Start. This is from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but they do have the information online, and there's a link to that information on the handout. But if anybody's using that or is interested in using that or gives it a try, I would be interested to hear how it goes and if you feel like it is useful for people in your community. So does anyone have any other thoughts or comments or discussion points related to this research?
Hi, Kristen. This is Peggy Olive.
Hi, Peggy.
And I was just taking a peek at the AARP has a Finances 50-plus curriculum.
Yes, okay.
And it doesn't have, like, what you were talking about with how to have the family conversations. It's more of the financial basics, like goal setting, budgeting,
yeah.
And also some of the scams and coming up with your financial plan. So, but that might be of interest, too, if people are looking for something that is targeted at a specific population.
Great. We will link to that as well on the website. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jen Witte, and I am working on, or not yet, but we're starting to work on, come this spring, kind of a tag-along curriculum to go with the Strong Women program, because currently they have some nutrition information that comes along with, which is great, and FoodWise is adding on, they're going to start piloting the Strong Women program through FoodWise,
mm-hmm.
So we're going to develop a curriculum that has the same style of lesson, just a short 10 to 15 minute lesson, but address like a multitude of health issues, just not nutrition. And we were thinking about looking into the financial piece and just lots of other areas of health, like preventative screenings and immunizations, all that kind of stuff. So this fits in really well as far as kind of topics we could include with that too.
Wonderful. And I'll be interested to hear, Jen, how that works out for you. I'm sure you're planning to do some evaluations of that. So I think it will be – you should share that with everyone after you've had a chance to test it out, once you've developed it and tested it tried it out. It would be just really interesting to hear how it goes, how people like it, what you're keeping, what you're changing. I think that would be great.
Yeah, the hope is to get it up and going, evaluated, and then disseminated out to the state. So that way anybody who wants to add it on can do it for sure.
Yeah. That would be really great. I'm really interested to hear how that works out. All right. Well, if you have other thoughts or questions or comments, please do let me know. You can always email me or give me a call. I will plug the fact that there is an evaluation that I sent out, or that Libby sent out on my behalf, to evaluate how you feel about these coffee breaks, as well as the other sort of programs, professional development things that I've been doing. So if you haven't had a chance to do that, please do, because I'm really interested to hear how this is going and how everything else is going and how I can better meet your needs. I really take the constructive criticism seriously and try to employ the things that I hear. So please do that. And I think that Libby will be sending out a reminder today to make sure that people have access to that link. Otherwise, if you do ever have feedback, you are welcome to call me or email me directly, because I always want to hear what's working and what's not. And then when we talk about next month, so on the docket for next month is talking about more changes over time. And in this case, we're going to be talking about health. And that might seem obvious. You know, people who are older have more health problems, but it's not as simple as that. And so we'll be talking a little bit about health over time and what happens to health, including mental health, as people age. All right, last chance for any questions, comments, anything else.
Kristen, when this the work group for creating aging from the communities meets later, are we going to be talking about Ann Time's suggestion or what we're going to do with some of these materials or if we're going to do something with them?
Sure. Okay. Yep.
Because I feel like you threw something out there, but we don't have a plan.
Yeah. No, we can talk about that. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. I love these. Thank you very much, Kristen.
No problem. All right, I'll let everyone get back to their day. Thank you very much for your time. It was great to hear from everyone, and hopefully I'll see you all next month as well.
Great opportunity, Kristen. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Kristen.